Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 166 of the Ant King Frequency. Larry, we're just 500 short of the devil's episode. How are you going, man?
I'm going pretty well. Damn it, we need to get closer to the devil. We need to be able to shout at the devil.
We do,
Summon the Dark Lord.
I know we talk about Evangelion way too much, but in my misspent youth, I remember watching the commentary for End of Evangelion, and they make a note that Misato's car park is car park number 665. That it was a warning by the director that things were heading towards the devil. I love that kind of over scrutiny.
Anyway. Though it's weird because when I think of like devilish stuff, it's outside of the United States, it just doesn't work because I'm thinking like devils. I'm like thinking maybe I could see California, Colorado, anywhere in America. I could see pretty much devils. I usually see devils in the bayous of Florida and all this and that. But see, like, you know, somebody worshiping the devil in Australia, like, oh,
His name's Taz, and he gives Daffy Duck such a hard time.
There you go. Taz comes out with a pitchfork and a cloak, making deals with Spider-Man about his marriage.
That would make more sense. That would have a far better consequence. Anyway.
Yeah. Just going. But yes, we're getting ever closer to that.
With me, little thing that I've been doing ties into, I guess, the last of the listener questions, Larry, that we had from our third anniversary show, the last of Leonard's questions where he asked about my musical process. So I thought if it's all right with you, I'd hog maybe a bit of the spotlight.
Yeah,
I mean, I welcome to hear your input on the matter and perhaps any process you've found in the past. But today, Larry, I thought we'd look at my musical process.
The Ant King of Frequency. So, of course, folks, this is going to be a vanity project. So if you want to tune out, that's not what I'm saying. But you had released this past weekend an EP, free EP, basically.
Well,
with cover art and all that.
You can pay for it if you want. There's a free version.
We prefer paying the artists.
Yeah,
because it's Antonio and his friend Mark D'Angelo.
But I'm hardly the richest guy in the world, so that's why we've got versions up on Spotify and YouTube to enjoy. But if you feel like buying and owning a copy, it's on all the commercial digital stores as well, your Google Play, your iTunes and whatnot. So it's a concept album, I guess I should say. And I'll save talking about that much more towards the end. But did you know, Larry, that there is a secret Ant King Frequency origin to one of the songs?
Would it be Electric Dreams?
No. No, so you didn't recognize one of the songs?
I didn't. I was listening to them, and like I'm recognizing your influences clearly,
right?
Like, you know, Gunship was a big influence. He's not a Gunship fan, folks. Well, I like one song, and he rips me on it. Now he's like, oh, I can't pick on him now. I was like, yeah, you can, but this is what happens. You had Gunship on the mind, my friend.
To be honest, one thing at the forefront of a lot of mine and Mark's thought processes was Stranger Things.
I see that. Yeah, I could see that. I saw a lot of yellow in there too. That's a lot of yellow.
But that's a good thing. We're big 80s heads too. And he's a huge horror buff. Like, he knows stuff about horror. He could forget more about horror than I would ever learn. So the whole John Carpenter side of things.
I was getting the John Carpenter. Who's that guy who worked Michael Jarre or
Jean-Michel Jarre.
Jean-Michel, him.
I'll reveal it now. I don't know if you remember this one. It doesn't have the vocal effects over it, but... I guess it needs you shorting out beforehand.
Oh, that's the in the dust thing, yeah. It just crumbles in the dust or whatever, yeah. When I was listening to that, there's a very Brad Fidel quality to that one. And I was listening to it, kind of get like a little bit of the love theme from Terminator.
Yeah.
A little bit of the storm is coming at the end of the film.
So that's that. It's about to get into the main bit, but. That was just a bit of sample music I was playing with, and I'll get into how I came up with that shortly. But when Mark and I decided, hey, look, it's time, we should start writing some new stuff. Here, I'll just fade this down a bit. Yeah, this you might recognise that. Yeah, we often. Yeah,
hearing the John Carpenter come up a bit, like the Brad Fidel go down, the John Carpenter come out, the yellow, the kind of the baseline of yellow,
yeah,
and like that right there, like somebody says, hey, your stuff looks like Mike Allred a little bit, and a little bit of this and that. I take that as a compliment. Like,
that's the equivalent. Yeah, no, I'm the same. Now listen to this. So this is from the new EP. I don't know if you can hear that clearly. That's just the intro.
Yeah.
But then it goes into...
Is that you or Mark?
That part's Mark, actually. Well, it's a vocoder effect on Mark. But, but the sound basis at the start of it is that same bit of music from the Aching Frequency. Episode. So I just thought that's a cool Aching Frequency reference. And some of you out there that have recordings of that, I know there are a couple of you that do. You so kindly made a dub from the show that you distributed on Twitter.
Very roughly.
But what you've got there is a demo for Ill Modernism. So how does the process work for me? But in a nutshell, I've got a very interesting thing. Tell me, Larry, let's say you've just gone into an art supply store or a stationery shop. What do you do?
All right, the first thing... I have nothing. My supplies are gone.
Yeah.
First thing I go do, get a Pentel pocket brush pen. Then I go get some number 2 Ticonderoga pencils.
Yeah.
8.5 by 11 cardstock paper.
Yeah.
If I don't have a clipboard, go get the hard called Masonite wood. It's like the wooden clipboards that don't really bend.
Sure,
they're pretty sturdy with the rubberized clamp at the top.
Yeah,
so it's like there's like a little bit of rubber, so it doesn't fully indent into the paper. Go in, grab that. Grab me a 12-inch ruler. You know, go ahead and pay for it. If I can get Staedtler non-photo repro blue pencils, get those
Staedtler,
and then just go in, and that's basically my kit, and sometimes it varies a little bit here and there.
So you know what you want, and you go and you get very much the same or similar thing every time. Well, see, mine's very different. What I love to do is I go through my hardware synthesizers, though usually when I'm writing or doodling, I call it, coming up with just ideas, I use soft synths. So I'm not sure what you know about the digital music world, but essentially samples of music and sample reproductions have got so good that I can play something that sounds exactly like a bass guitar or an acoustic guitar just with my keyboard using the PC as the sample engine. So I've got dozens of emulators of old synthesizers, but the digital version, I guess it's the equivalent of having, you know, a digital inkwell or inking application on your computer. So there are purists who say that the final result is still noticeable, but to many it's not. It's very hard to tell. For instance, what have I got here? Like, this is an actual bit of hardware, but it's very hard to tell the modern digital reproduction of a Roland Juno 106 adapter to the actual full big Juno 106 keyboard, which I used to own, actually. I actually gave it to Mark, my colleague, and he got me this because mine was in a state of disrepair and he was going to fix it up, which he did. And some of that you'll hear on the recording. So my process is I like to go through and just experiment with sounds, to be honest.
Kind of build at least like a sketchbook, you know, like kind of a, you know, just play around a little bit.
Yeah.
Like a sketchbook of sounds.
I like to, A, look for sounds that I like, but sometimes I like to look for sounds that I dislike and make them work for me.
Oh, no. Which I dislike, which hinders my fun in doing something instead of trying to conquer it and make it something useful. I'm like, that goes over here in the corner. It goes to the idea ghetto and stays there. And that wall gets 10 feet higher each time.
Yeah.
So I go over here and focus on what I'm able to weave through. So,
yeah,
that's weird. That's interesting that you actually, you know, you seek out what doesn't work for you and make it work.
So, you know how you draw stuff that you know from heart so quickly and so easily?
Yeah.
So when often I'm playing with these new sounds, I just run through them. Sometimes I could spend less than a second with a sound. I'm doing these little muscle memory, little spasms and tweaks and riffs and licks on the keyboard that I know, you know, playing with the pitch bend and stuff. So it's almost like this weird sort of muscle memory thing as I cycle through the sounds. A good example would be on YouTube, the same YouTube channel that hosts our Anking Frequency Highlights, there are some of my keyboard demos. So do have a look for them because you actually see me writing songs live and how it works for me. But typically it's not unlike a piece of art, man. You start with the sketch, you know, you get a general sense of things. So for me, that's usually the chords, the basis. Much like you'd block a scene. Like you do a thumbnail, right? For your art. And what's in that thumbnail?
Yeah, it's pretty much just to your work and stuff like that. But very, very rough.
Exactly. So that'd be similar for me. For me, I work with the chordal background, and I build up from there. I'll add very quickly bass. Piano or even guitar, sets the chords, sets that rhythm, the bump, 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 bump kind of sound. It's less melodically or harmonically based. In a traditional jazz outfit, you're less likely to hear a solo come from that section if you don't have to. So because of that, they call it the rhythm section, because all the saxophones and trumpets do all the showboating. But yeah, it's... For me, I get those core instruments down, and then from there, I'll do the melodies and stuff. I like to work that way, writing all the music first and then writing a song or the melody and lyrics over that, typically.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it just comes to me and I do it all in one go. So that song, Electric Dreams, for instance, it's the last track on the EP. I was writing and singing the words as I was writing the chords. It's one of those ones that just hit me at 3 a.m. in the morning, and it was just this, this organic output, which, you know, you've had in art as well.
Yeah, I do. I got. We were, you know, I was like, have right here. We were talking, like, I just got hit with this idea, and it, like, full, not even sketch wise, the idea was like full born. And it had to go on the paper. I have a little sketchbook, and I took Ticonderoga pencil, machine gunned it out under the page, and because it had to be born. It had to be born.
Yeah,
and like that sounds like what happened with you. Would you, you know, with your music making process? It sometimes it's pieced together over time, and sometimes boom, there you go.
Well, that I think. Oh. Sorry, it's just started up again on my computer. That I think is. Really what I'm trying to do with my mate Mark here is that we're trying to write off the cuff and not censor ourselves, not really try and bog ourselves down with, is this art or are we doing anything new? Really, we just wanted to belt something out. So we recorded a 5-track EP over two nights and got it out there.
Two nights?
Yeah.
Two nights?
Yeah.
What the hell? That's great, man.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, you know, there's more creative talent in those two nights. It was born in those two nights than all of, you know, all 20 of songwriters from Beyonce.
Well, yeah, listen, that's where overproduction can really kill a few people. And I'm very lucky that that my mate Mark has gone into the, I guess, industry, I guess you could say. He's got his own music studio, which has a mostly consistent setup you'd find in any major music studio. So he works in film production, and we used his music suite for that. So it was great. We got to do something which most people don't have, and that's just have a recording studio at our beck and call. So we just both went in there and recorded over the night. Over two nights and got that. And I think we wanted to do this concept, Il Modernissimo, because we both love 80s. Il Modernissimo is an in-joke, actually, for, I guess it's our version of, you know the ad that was on YouTube for ages? It was for Flea Market Montgomery. It was one of those memes. Yeah. It was that black guy rapping about his flea market.
I don't remember that one.
No,
I think I avoided the ad as much as possible.
I got to show it to you because there's a tie in to the Il Modernissimo reference indirectly. Okay. To that flea market Montgomery. You must have seen it.
I might have. I just don't remember.
I'll send you the link.
Unlike a lot of people, I don't try not to remember commercials or ads or anything like that.
It was really big, like in the, you know, when Tosh.0 became big and all that, you know, when people started, when the meme culture really first emerged.
You can find them at the market. We talking about flea market. Montgomery is just like, it's just like a mini mall. Oh yeah, come shop with us. I said flea market. Montgomery is just like, it's just like a mini mall. Hey, you heard me. Come shop.
You don't know that?
Living rooms, bedrooms.
That's familiar now. It's just like, it's just like a mini mall.
Hey, you heard me.
Okay, so
my brain's all Swiss cheese to begin with.
So since the 1960s, we've had the Italian migrant equivalent of that here in Melbourne, Australia, a chap called the Franco Cozzo. And like all migrants, he just rambles between languages. One of the things he used to yell out whilst displaying this horrible, vomitous, baroque, gold-plated, Corinthian, I don't know, Tony Montana nightmare lounge settings, is he'd yell out,
to you il modernissimo bedroom suites, dining room,
so that became,
and wonderful lounge.
It's like a joke. You go around Melbourne, especially in the walkie parts of town, and you're like, il modernissimo, everyone will yell out, Franco Cozzo, no, go see the Franco Cozzo. Anyway,
very tight-knit meme, as it were. Very, very, very communal meme.
Yeah. But instantly evocative to anyone who knows the meme of 80s time displaced. sort of just I don't know, culture. Similarly, not unlike when you used to go to, I don't know, if you went into any like old museums or places that used to be museums, and you saw paintings of things like dinosaurs, and there were these weird upward standing multicolored reptiles with, you know, disproportionate heads and stuff, and it was what they thought the dinosaurs looked like.
Sitting on their tails, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. Well, that's what Il Modernissimo is. It's sort of like what they thought the music of today would have been in 1980.
you know, with Mark having his own studio, the love for, you know, your combined love for the 80s, I should just get a ticket and go down there and just, we should cover that. You got the touch.
Yeah.
You like, you're just reenact a scene from Boogie Nights.
Exactly.
You know, I'm born for this, man. You got the touch.
Well, that's it. And it's about fun. So, and this is the interesting thing. We're not doing Il Modernissimo again, at least not unless there's a huge calling for it and it's some huge success overnight. That's it. We're done with Il Modernissimo. We're on to a new project now, which is top secret. And when that's done, we'll probably try another style. But for us, it's just about putting stuff out there. Not unlike you, Larry. I mean, how often do you churn out sequential content again and again and again?
Not very often, because I look at it this way. I get bored easily, and I like, it's one of these things, like somebody, oh, I have a great idea, like kind of a Walking Dead idea where it can go forever theoretically. I would never do it because I'd probably want to be looking at one of my guns in my gun collection and be like, you know what, today's the day. It's like, I mean, looking at a 40 caliber round as I put it in the clip and put in another in there, like, not today, Larry, not today, put it aside. Because I could not see myself doing the same thing over and over again. I understand why artists want to break out, like where you had the Beatles, where they were doing the poppy stuff, a little punky, like pre-punk, a little bit pop, you know, and they were doing the whole German tour, you know, days, like they're a little wild, rambunctious a little bit, like, you know, kind of little Hellraisers, then the full-on pop, and then the experimental psychedelic stuff and what have you. Rock and then experimental psychedelic. So I get why people do not want to be pigeonholed into that. Oh, all you do is 80s music. All you do is kind of 80s music or something. Like me, like I would actually kill to, like, years ago, I was tempted to learn the banjo because I like the sound of the banjo. And it's like, I wish I'd done it, because like my brain's, like I said, Swiss cheese. I can't learn.
Nah, what's stopping you, man? You should. Listeners out there, back me up on this one. I want that to happen so bad.
Well, if I knew the banjo, I'd be writing like these kind of neon cowboy western kind of songs.
Or yes, whatever. You would
like,
be.
You know, something like,
I'll write with you. We'll send songs back and forth over the ether.
John Carpenter meets Waylon Jennings.
Why not?
You know, like I'd listen to that. Nobody else would.
I would.
It's like, I'm in. Hey, like, you see these characters with these like whatever Coke bottle glasses? They don't really need to go. Like, man, I love your music. Says, I hate you, but. Give me your money. I buy my album. I don't care. I judge you, but give me your money.
Well, what stops you? See, one of the things that helped us was that we realized we're not in our 20s anymore. We're not touring musicians. We're not performing artists. We're just recording for the sake of recording. When you perform, you're trapped in a model of playing. Everyone expects a style. You get booked on a certain roster to play a certain style of music. You get fans and you get bookers and agents that want you to say play the same music again and again. You're focused so much on improving and getting better. You'll spend 2 weeks maybe writing material, but then you'll spend 2 months getting it tight to performance level. I don't think people realize that there's a difference between writing the music and being able to play it live.
Yeah.
And then you're touring and you're beholden to playing those same songs again and again wherever you go. I mean, name an artist that doesn't still play his hits. No one.
Well, those that do, they'll get they get backlash for not doing so.
It's even like, Beyonce has to do Crazy in Love now and again.
Yeah, so they always got to touch back to the hits. They can't escape it fully, you know.
So but it's like we're free of that.
Yeah, so you're cutting your own path and not beholden to what has come before, which is one EP at this rate. Yeah. So
let's put it this way: back when Mark and I were performing musicians with one of our bands, Derby Field, which was sort of an alternative folk band, I guess you could say. It lived beyond description, but our second EP with Derby Field. We recorded one winter and didn't release it until 2 winters later. So extensive was that. Well, we recorded it, then half the band weren't happy with the quality of the recordings. The other half of the band wanted to keep it as is and just release it. Then it went to another mixer to remix and re-record some things, and then it got lost in development hell, and that went off for mastering, and then we were told, no, there's too many releases at this time. Release it 6 months later, and in the middle there was potential for a deal with a record agency, and just all this crap happens, and it kills the music. I mean, it broke up the band effectively. We lost the drummer and the, I guess you call him trumpet, or auxiliary musician, through that process. And inevitably, for a six-piece band to lose a third, we didn't really recover from that, even though we brought Phil in. So, yeah, people don't understand the complexities involved in that and the difference between writing something for presentation. Like, I guess the analog would be you drawing in front of a crowd as opposed to drawing in front of, you know, if I got you to draw a flapjack in front of a crowd as opposed to drawing at home with all your stuff, being able to rub stuff out, start again, whatnot, to be able to draw it perfectly to the nth amount of detail each time, you'd have to do some practice first, right?
Yeah. And even then, I'm like, the way I look at it, it's like, this is what's weird about me. I'm like, people say, like, especially in art, and same thing with music, it's all about practice, practice, practice. That's, you know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, you know, whatever. Me, the more practice I do, the more bored I get. If I draw somebody over and over and over again as practice, not as I'd rather draw it, like, kind of draw it to be published to, whether on paper, digitally, just put it out there to the world. Learn from the mistakes of that, and then, you know, tackle it again the next time. Because if I practice drawing the same character, even if it's a character I love and this and that, I've learned fondness does not make the heart. Fondness for me makes me grow bitter, angry, resentful.
I know, like, this about you, Larry.
I was listening to a live stream the other day, and I was like, "Oh, this would be fun. You listen to this," and I realized, I knew it was, it started coming on where I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna start hate these people if I keep listening to this. So I stopped.
Yeah,
and so keep the interactions to a limit, because, you know, to a limited amount. Same thing with, like, oh, if I keep drawing this character, that's why I gotta jump from ship to ship to ship to ship to ship, and, like, rotate. If I don't, like, oh, Bishop, the dude with the tentacles from Mask, because, and the reason his name's Bishop, because that's all he had on him was a bishop, you know, chest piece, because he was thrown in a river and left for dead, and, you know, this and that, whatever. And that's, it's like, it's kind of tragic, but it's kind of goofy, funny, whatever. If I drew that dude day in and out and practiced and got everything down pat and this and that, it would make me lose my mind, and I'd hate the character outright. I'd never want to draw it again.
Why do you think most touring musicians hate what they do and get so sick of it and act up and get drunk and high and sleep around and just act like total tits? Because that's what the process does to you. I'm not justifying it, and I'm not saying I'm not envious of that lifestyle. I think back of it fondly, mostly. I also think back to my touring life and feel a little exhausted because, living life on the road is rough. Like, unless you're like some AAA lister going from first class hotel to first class hotel, when you're living at the back of your van with, you know, five of your burpingest, fartingest mates, yeah, it's just.
That's why I'm glad I'm a lone wolf. Dude, doing everything myself and like, oh, I can't believe you write and draw and letter and you color too, Larry, because I couldn't stand working with other people. I'd want to strangle them. It's like, you know, I don't mind working with Antonio. We collaborate from time to time and it's fun.
But I also know, right, Larry, like, you're Tia Carrera from Rising Sun. Occasionally, I need to open that birdcage and let you fly away, and then you'll come back.
No, I'm more like Elizabeth from BioShock Infinite.
Where you go with this one, mate?
No. The reason I say that,
I'm just imagining Chris Hardwick giving you a big old kiss.
Wait, was he in that?
Oh no! Didn't you see those photos?
No.
Oh.
No, I did.
Okay.
I guess it was what, some Elizabeth cosplay or something.
No, him and that Chloe Dykstra girl cosplayed as Booker DeWitt and Elizabeth.
Oh no!
And got on a massive kissing session on.
That's disturbing.
Yeah.
Well, he's a manlet anyway, so he doesn't count. He's like 5'9".
On the Nerdist himself, he's a self-confessed lady tall, man short.
That a manlet. Wow. He's a manlet, but I feel bad because I basically I called him a poor little feller, and a friend of mine's like, but I'm 5'9". I was like, oh, I feel kind of bad. It's like it's collateral damage. It still stands, but no, it's like, you know, like it just. You try caging me up, I'm gonna be like Songbird. I'm gonna wreck your mess up. I'm gonna tear your tower down. So yeah, just let me do my thing. Don't hinder me. Antonio knows this. Antonio's a wise man.
And you can hear it. But that's any friendship or relationship for that matter. You there are cues which you learn, and similarly with Mark, who I write music with. I mean, we went to high school together. We were writing music together in 1998. So from the time of 1998. So. Even though music's come and gone, and we've had our falling outs, especially, I mean, I went and worked for the guy, for God's sake, and then split on him, which, you know, caused a bit of silence, but I'm happy, and the relationship is better for it that I did that when I did. You know, it's like a married relationship. You end up finishing each other's sentences, albeit musically. You know what I mean? And that isn't that the whole aim of the game is that we do that. So
yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I think this has been a real good like look inside your creative process right here, and it's like, you know, for a person I have no musical talent. I've tried playing guitar, I've tried playing drums, I've tried playing piano and, you know, guitars and keyboards and stuff, and I suck at all of it. It's like the thing about like mainly because I'm right-handed, but young age I had a hatchet put in my hand by my little brother. He put a hatchet in my hand.
Don't blame Jim.
No, seriously though. So it's like if I'm trying to play guitar because I'm right-handed, I've tried playing left and it's weird. It's like a zombie. It's like trying to like a zombie playing, you know, guitar. And I could play for, try playing a little bit and practicing, and then my hand starts, it feels like, it's like Evil Dead, like the black lines of the evil infection. That's what it feels like. My hand is going to be, we're going to rot off because it hurts so much because the tendons are still kind of messed up or something, or the bones. It's like, I could draw because you're not really moving your hand. You're not moving your fingers that much. You know, not for me. Like, you're not moving like that. But,
oh, but you still need the muscle strength. I guess I'm doing it wrong. See, guitar is different. Guitar takes a lot of acquired muscle movement, I guess, from early on.
Yeah, so it's hand-eye coordination's all messed up. Too many bumps to the head, too many damn. I'm falling apart. I'm like RoboCop and RoboCop 2. After Kane and his crew took apart. Took him apart, and he's like spazzing out on the ground. And go. Oh.
All I can say after, and I'm sure the listeners will back me up, is that man, the banjo would suit you to a T. Anything I can do to help you with that? I know Swan is a really good make of banjo. I've got some banjoist friends out there, and they speak highly of Swan as a model. But yeah,
I think it'd be well. There's actually old family homestead.
Yeah.
There is a, every year in like late July, early August, they do the bluegrass, they do this bluegrass festival. And so there is nothing but like banjos, guitars, all that stuff out there, you know, washboards and stuff, you know, this, you know, they got that kind of stuff. So I could probably find one, not like two on the cheap, but cheap enough, or inexpensive enough.
The thing I find, and this is how I learned to play guitar. You just need time. Like, you just need to be able to bum around doing nothing else. For me, that was being 18 and the school year had just finished. I spent that summer with guitar in my hand, driving the whole household nuts.
So, yeah, for me, it's like that's why I don't play D&D. I don't mess with D&D because what I could spend on D&D, I could be drawing. I could be drawing, you know, story. And I'll consider the whole banjo thing because I could take lessons from online. Like, that's a good thing about YouTube and everything. It's like, you could take lessons from digitally now. You don't have to go to some place. You can
I just find music's a passive thing. Whilst I'm going through the synth sounds or whilst I'm noodling guitar, often I'll have something up on YouTube or have a movie up on Netflix and just be, watching and just fiddling away. And then suddenly, hey, what was that? I'll stop what I'll do. And
you created something. And hey, and that's the creative process is a fascinating one. So thank you, Leonard, for messaging and leaving us that third anniversary message and about the music process.
That's true. And if there's anything you wanted to share, maybe you've got some music that you've made, let us know at Larry King Undead or at Antonio Sanciola on Twitter, podcast at antkingfrequency.com. Check out the liner notes too, because I'll have some links to Il Modernissimo. Like I said, if you like anything and you'd like to own it, buy it, but otherwise it's there for you to listen to for free on YouTube. Anything else you wanted to add, Larry?
Pay what you want. Please pay enough, because it's a good album and it's fantastic music. And pay your artists, please.
No. Do what you can. That's all I say, because I'm in that boat. Totally get it. All right, guys. We will talk to you soon. See ya.
Frequency. Copyright 2018 by White Tiger Graphics.